But this riddle of the roadhouse, when this mail robbery took place, this was written up in True Magazine some years ago, and it was quite interesting because this was all premeditated robbery. In other words, they knew the certificates were in the mail, and Bill Duffy, who was driving the dogs, was taking care of Nellie, who was at that time one of our famous girls down there. And so it was already planned, you might say. And Schumacher, who was in it also, when they had the trial, he went to jail. And then after he got sick in jail, his conscience started to bother him, and so he spilled the whole story, and then the trial came back here to Fairbanks, and there was a fellow by the name of, not Malcolm, but he was a famous attorney here you had here in the early days.
John Markham.
Markham. That's Markham. Right. He fought the case. And Nellie, she won, and Schumacher lost. But anyway, it was a strict case of robbery, but nevertheless, it never did end up the way most cases should, where...
Who got the money? How much?
I think there was about, as I recall, about $60,000 involved. As I recall.
Some of it was recovered.
Yeah, some of it was recovered under a tree or something, I forget. But that's quite a story. It would make a good television program today.
John, how they got hit to this old fellow out in the hospital, you know. He got out of the country with a lot of that money.
Yeah, that's right.
He had $100 bills and these old Prince Albert tobacco cans, you know.
Over the cans.
And seal them up again, like the same seal, like it was, you know.
Yes.
But anyway, how they got on to him was that he kind of got sweet on a nurse in the hospital, you know. And he was quite an elderly man.
Oh, yes.
And every once in a while, he'd pull one of these $100 in the back of the box and give it to her.
Yeah, that's what really exposed the case. I believe the story, as you told it, was in the story of True Magazine too.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they brought him back and tried him, and there was acquitted, but the title was his name Stettelmeyer.
Yeah, Schumacher.
Schumacher.
Yeah.
And he was sentenced to a very light sentence. Doled him out or put him out on parole over here at the Curry Hotel. He was a gardener or something.
Yeah.
That's okay. He wound up.
Yes, well, these things that have happened, as I said, they're fairy tales. I mean, a lot of them today, and they're interesting. And I, to me, they're very interesting because I've lived through a lot of it myself, and I tell my boy about a lot of it down there at Flat as we drive around, and even at 5 or 6 now that he's going to be. He's very interested in all these things, so he asked me all these questions. And, of course, I try to review all this as much as I can through these old-timers that are still living, because they're the only ones that you can get the knowledge on these subjects from. And we're losing them one by one, so as they go, of course, the material goes with them.
I wish we could take a tape recorder down there and get some of those fellows' stories.
Well, yes, some of those fellows, there's a few of them still around in that area. They're still living, and yes, I believe it could be done. You'd have to have electricity, which you can get in most every area now, and it would be interesting.
Some of them run on batteries.
No, you wouldn't with your battery operated one, with your transistor type, you wouldn't. That's right. So, but I think probably, like you were discussing here tonight through your news media, and through, I think the News Miner and Jessen's Weekly ought to make it an effort to every week run a something on this whole program that we're talking about.
We did put it in for a while, but...
You mean as an advertisement?
Yeah, well, no, they published it.
They would.
My wife put it in.
Yeah, I wrote it.
She bogged down.
But, you know, the people would read them, and they would still wouldn't come here or help with any of the work. It just fell on my husband and Jim and his wife, Cassidy's, and Frank Young and
sure.
The Florence.
We've all gotten tired,
right? Well, I can appreciate that. Well, I wish I was spending time here where I could devote my time, because in the winter months, of course, but not being here, you can't work with the organization. It makes it real difficult. The only thing I can do is when I am available to pitch in, so to speak. But
well, you can pitch in and put a lot of this stuff that you find around in such and such a place so that you know where it is when you want it.
Well, I'm keeping
we ought to get a list of that stuff now.
Keeping pretty good track of it, and I've got it down there where it's in a place where you have to fly in, as you know, my Glenn, down there. You can't. So it's pretty well protected as long as I'm there. Now, Fabian Carey was down there and, of course, saw quite a few of the things, and, of course, he was extremely interested also. But we at Flatfield, it's a flat project, and... we would like to keep it as such.
In the park, keep it as such.
Yeah, that's right. We don't want to get anybody capitalizing on this stuff, so to speak, because if anybody's going to do it, we'll do it, but we don't want to do it. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I would prefer that this goes into a park or a museum sort of thing, you know, where you can...
centrally located.
That's right, where you can show it. Mm-hmm. And as you see the tourists coming up here, I have several friends coming up here this year from California and some from Florida and Alaska, and they'll be down the flat to visit me, and you'd be surprised the interest that they have taking pictures of this and then taking it back to the States and showing it in the wintertime.
But we don't want to get... we ought to road from Georgetown to Flat, but we don't want to road from here to Flat.
No. Well, from here to Flat is a long, long dream. But from Georgetown to Flat, that wouldn't hurt us at all, Mr. Reed.
That would take in the Cinnabar mine, too.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would. Red Devil.
When I was a highway engineer, I tried to get money to do it.
But we had, again, as you know, in Alaska's history, as you look back, there were a lot of things that were done which you can't really blame the people who were at fault. And we had people in the transportation business who also might have been the key people in the community. And they, of course, had the influence now. And if you were to suggest a road during the day that Harry Donnelly ran the boat, and was going to knock out all his riverboat transportation, you know what you were up against. So you see, they were all working for an interest which had to be protected. But today, Alaska's past that stage.
Yeah,
we are past that stage, definitely. And we must work as a state as a whole, not as the Iditarod River versus the George River or any other area, you might say. And unless they do these things like, for instance, tell her to Caltag. There's another road, which is very important.
I walked that road.
You
with
did?
The,
well,
I walked it twice with the
I've
idea
flown
of,
over
it,
but,
of building it.
And I've talked to many people about it. And it affects the area immediately. And that's what the Georgetown Road would do. It would affect us immediately. And we're all interested in the broad programs, but the things that we need are things that I can utilize in the next 10 or 15 years, because 50 years from now is not going to do me much good.
Even 10 years don't do me any good.
So I keep harping on the theory that we must get our local areas moving again a little bit in the right direction, otherwise those areas are going to be nothing but brush and beaver.
Well, is there anything there to make them move that they need to move?
Well, you mean in the area?
Is there still
some money?
Oh, yes.
Available?
Well, there's still a spirit left in the country that it'll bring people in once they can get in. And I'm not of the opinion that our area or any area in Alaska is dead and it's going to be a cavity or a vacuum, so to speak, in this old state. There was a time during the First World War when everybody went in the army at Flat and everybody left, practically. And they said Flat is dead, and so they all left. Well, my dad just watched them leave, and he starts staking ground. And when the tractor came in as an example, it just brought the population right back up again. Now, if the price of gold should change, or the picture should change where we got some assistance in mining gold, you'd see Flat again with 500 people or maybe 1,000 people.
Don't you think a road to Georgetown would reduce your costs enough so you could bring
It would reduce our costs, and it would also allow us to bring in some of the new and modern machinery, which now we can't even think about because you can't get it in a boxcar.
Right.
And there are many things that we could do if we had the road. And also, if you try to promote the area and get money in the area to develop it, the first thing they look at, what is your transportation problem?
Is Georgetown on the Yukon?
It's on the Kuskokwim.
Oh, on the Kuskokwim.
It runs right into the Kuskokwim.
Kuskokwim has a deep water port.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Kuskokwim is a... So what we would plan to do if we opened up the Golden Horn Mine as an example, which I'm looking at, is to take our ore to the river and bring our oil back. And I mean, that's the natural routing of any development program. You have a double haul. But these little short segments of roads are so important in so many areas. And since we took over as a state and are now involved in this big program of highways, the little roads have been dropped off, so to speak. We're still in the system, and they are part of the system for the matching funds, but we're not getting the funds back to us, or we're not actually getting the taxes that we're paying on a lot of our fuels that is supposed to go into our roads. Now, where it's going, I don't know, but we're not getting it back. So,
hey, this road of 35 miles to Georgetown, how much do you think it would cost to build it as a pioneer road?
Well, because it follows the ridges and there's no bridges there, and they've hauled freight over it many years in a row there over the winter months, and it used to be a haul trail in the summer months with mules and horses. It's a matter of going in on and following these ridges with a bulldozer and scraping the moss and the brush off and putting some drainage ditches in, and there you'd have a road.
It costs about $4,000 a mile.
Yes, I was. That's just what I was going to say. Probably $150,000 would, or $200,000 somewhere in that neighborhood. It's certainly not a major highway construction project such as you would undertake if you were to go to the North Slope or something like that.
Or four-lane highway to the
Nome area. They're building a highway from Nome to Teller. They call it the Blodgett Road. But by the time they get to Fairbanks, they're going to have to start on the other end and doing it all over again, I think. Well, we need more of that kind of development on roads, and until they do, it's going to be real difficult. Airplanes are fine.
How many people are living in that area now?
Well, in the summer months, there's about 30 of us in the summer months, but we're producing in the area now about, roughly, it's still producing about $300,000 in gold. So that's not a small operation anymore. And there's two dredges operating at Flat, and we have potential there for some real production in the lower end of water if a bigger dredge were installed. But all these things, of course, have to be evaluated and then promoted and money brought in and so on. And if this continues to dwindle away as it has in the last 10 years, in the next 10 years, then it's going to be awful hard to revive what we're talking about. And this is the thing that I hate to see.
Yeah, I hate to
see. Yeah, it's...
Are there any small class of miners too?
Yes, there is. There's a number of them there. There's the Agoff brothers and the Fullerton brothers. And then there's the Miskovich brothers and John Stevens. We consider ourselves all small people, as mining companies go, if you know what I mean. But we all have big dreams, too. And we're all young, and we've lived up here all our life, and we know the business of mining, and we know what it has done to our area. And we could be doing a lot of other things besides mining gold, but because it has been our life occupation, and we sort of like it, we like to stick with it. And that is a sad part about gold mining, that at one time all these trails were developed by gold, and whatever came in was found sort of as an aftermath of gold. I think you'll agree that gold was the guiding light, and the tin and copper and iron and cinnabar and all those things came in after gold.
Yeah, they're coming up, and gold is squashed.
Is squashed, that's right.
Minerals do you have there?
Well, as I said, we have gold and silver and lead and zinc and copper and antimony and some coal. And Bureau of Mines has spent a lot of money there also doing some development work and writing a report on the area. And another thing, we have had reports now until they're coming out of our ears. And the thing we need now is capital to take and see just how do those reports reflect the actual condition. So we got to get into some of these deposits. And in order to get into them, of course, it's going to require exploratory work, development work.
Well, the government subsidizes that.
No, it don't. There's a... No, the government subsidizes it on a small scale, but they don't subsidize it on the scale that I'm talking about, because they subsidize it if you want to take a pick and a shovel and a drill.
Well, one man drill.
Yes, that's right. But what I'm talking about is a large bulk sampling development and exploration program. And Fairbanks here could be probably explored and developed in that manner too, from the head of Esther Clear to the head of Fairbanks Creek. We could open up Grand Canyon, so to speak, to see what we have here. And find out if all these old timers had dug all these shafts and put all these holes in the mountains here, what were they looking for? What did they have? And today, to do it with drilling methods, it's almost impossible. You just can't do it. So you've got to bulk sample this area. That's the only way you can do it, to prove it. And it takes money to do that. But I think it's a gamble that's well worth spending a few $100,000 on. Now, the Office of Mineral Exploration has a department, it's a federal department, which is operating out of Spokane, and you can borrow money on a 50-50 participation basis to develop a piece of property. But if your program doesn't conform to their specifications and the method doesn't conform to their way of doing it, then, of course, you are disqualified.
And it's very seldom in Alaska that you can conform.
That's what I was going to say. As a miner all my life, I had a real economical program set up for flat and went through all the red tape, and then I failed because it hinged and borderlined on actual mining, see? Well, of course, I could have done it any other way and got the money, but I would have never gotten anywhere. And this thing should be changed, and it's too bad that the people of Alaska, through the Bureau of Mines and the federal and the state, that they don't bear pressure on Bartlett and on Rivers and on Gruning to change this condition, because they're sending billions to Bolivia and to Ecuador and to Argentina and all over the world for the very same thing that we need here. And it's a thing that we, as an individual that asked for, say, $50,000, after 2 years of red tape, I had to give up. And yet Ben Shalit can go to Bolivia and he can become the head of a United Nations program that's spending millions.
Didn't you see the last article in April 22nd Life?
No,
about Siberia, where they said the Russians have got to develop Siberia, but we've got all kinds of riches in Alaska, but we don't have to develop Alaska yet. We can let it go for 100 years.
Is the mosquitoes there as bad now as in the early days?
Well, I would say they're as bad, but as an example, last summer there weren't any.
Wow.
They froze up, I guess, due to no snow the year during the winter. But now this year we've had 10 or 12 feet of snow down there, so I'll bet you this year we'll have one of the worst years we've ever had. Now, they're still plenty bad. But I don't, unless it's asked, I don't discuss mosquitoes at all with anybody. Unless said about mosquitoes, why, the better off you are trying to promote your area.
Yeah. Yeah, and they can pick your hat off and fly away with it.
That's right. Well, it's interesting, and it's a challenge, and I think that's the thing that makes us go back after it.
Challenge is the only thing in this life is worthwhile.
Does anyone live there through the winter?
Yes, we have a postmaster there. He's a newcomer. I say newcomer, he's about 25 years he's had there now. And he lives there year in and year out. And then we have these two old-timers there, Joel Ranji and Fred Pearson. And there's a lady does. She spent most of her time there, Mrs. Joe Parker. She's the wife of an old-timer that passed away. And she spends practically the year round there also. So there's about six people there. I think we had 17 votes there in the last election.
You haven't any schooling now then?
No, we have no school. But we have a schoolhouse there which has gone downhill pretty fast the last few years with a bad roof and so on. They had a lot of supplies there and so on, but the educational department hasn't been in there for years that I can remember now to check on it. So there's no school. Huh?
Your kids.
Well, I've had to stop at three now. I can't do as well as my father did to start my own school down there. But school is a problem, believe me.
Well, if you get the, if you can revive the economy there, then you have children.
That's just what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. That we have room there for a lot of people because we have good water and we have a nice community. We have a lot of buildings there, too, that could be utilized. We have a good airport now, and we have about 40 miles of road. And as an example, there are 28 people coming in there from Anchorage on the 18th of September. They call themselves a Sourdough Club. And Mrs. Stewart, I believe the Stewart's Photoshop in Anchorage is at the head of it. So they wrote me, and they're going to charter an airplane to come into Flat and spend the night with us. They're kind of a prospecting club. And so they'll go over these trails, of course, and I'll make sure that their pockets are sewed up. But there's a lot of people that have been in there. As Jim knows, he used to visit us every year down there for many years when he was with the NC Caterpillar from here and going into that area. And there is a lot of interest there. And you wouldn't believe it to fly in there now and go over those roads and over those hills and over those areas that they're mining and see what you see, because it has a very beautiful setting. It's about the most beautiful setting, I think, in the whole state. And so it has a lot of interest. We've had many distinguished visitors in there from Stanford and manufacturers, representatives, and other people, too. And that is the reason that I've been harping on getting Fairbanks interested in getting transportation improved to our area down there. See, we used to be the hub in Fairbanks here of a wheel, and the spokes went all directions, and the mail went out of Fairbanks, down to Nenana, and then by boat, and then by dog team in the wintertime, and then when the airplane started, it went also by airplane. And you could get on an airplane here practically every day of the week and come back the same day or the following day. You could come to town and shop, and Fairbanks was it in our area. Well, today, Anchorage is the hub, so to speak. If you want to come to Fairbanks, you got to go to Anchorage. Now, with this centennial coming up, I hope that they will do something to increase the frequency of the flights out of here, which Northern Consolidated has, so that people can come and go. And when we, of course, forced the mail out of Fairbanks to Anchorage, as you remember, they said they had too much to do here, and Anchorage had a big post office with not enough to do. So they shifted a lot of the mail to Anchorage. Well, now we're sorry we ever did that, because we lost the service that we used to get out of Fairbanks by the mail subsidy going into Anchorage.
Anchorage doesn't seem to realize that all Alaska's tied together, and their prosperity is tied in with ours.
Well, that is a fact, and Fairbanks here has to do everything it can to bring in people to spend money in order to survive these long winters, and that is a thing that they have to make every effort to do, is to get you can go to Nome, or you can go to the Porcupine or the Keokuk area, you can go to Circle, Dawson, you can go anywhere in the northern part of Alaska, and Fairbanks any day of the week, and with more than one airline. But you try to get down to our area now, and it's once a week, and then it might be loaded.
Does Ween pass there too?
No, Ween goes to Galena, see. We have a piece of pie like this, which is actually a blank. From Fairbanks.
Yeah, used to fly from here. I've flown from
Jim
here,
Dodson,
here.
Jim Dodson.
I've flown from here to Iditarod.
Sure. They used to, Jim Dodson, and well, earlier when Pacific Alaska, which then became Pan American and Alaskan Airways, and Oscar Winchell and Alaska Star. And But we had many airlines operating here. Gillam operated here for years, you know, steady in the winter months, twice, three times a week. But Fairbanks now is not our major supply point anymore. And I took it up with the Chamber of Commerce here 2 years ago, and they said they would try to do something, but like a lot of the things the Chamber does, they listen very sincerely and give you a pat on the back, and then when you leave, you are forgotten. And that's no discredit to them, but I mean, it's a thing that they've got to realize, that they could bring in thousands of dollars here in Fairbanks. We have to ship all our supplies out of Anchorage. So,
I think your whole prosperity depends on that road to Georgetown. If that is done, why you then your supplies will come.
Oh yes, then we would have a real access to supplies and also to our materials and so on that we need in there. But I have almost given up trying to. Well, I haven't given up, but I mean it does get very frustrating to go on. continually trying to point out the necessity of what you're asking for. When you see farmers and others in the area of Fairbanks or Matanuska or Palmer, or, you know, they can get the road most any time they want to, but a gold miner, he just doesn't have a chance.
Yeah, they give their taxes amount to something to the state.
Well, sure it does, and sure it does. Look at our payroll taxes, our fuel taxes, our gasoline taxes. We contribute a considerable amount to the state, and we'd do a lot more if we had.
Well, you don't pay gasoline transportation and that highway tax.
We pay a gas tax there for yes.
Not the.
No, we don't down there. No, what you're talking about is the state highway tax. No, we don't. Well, we have a. It's included in the price of our gasoline, of course. Yes, we pay a tax on our gasoline, except what we use in our welders, or that's off highway. Sure, we pay.
But don't you pay 8 cents a gallon?
Sure, we
huh? Farms don't.
The farmers don't because they're off.
They do when they use the roads.
When they use the roads, they do.
Yeah, but now, like the gasoline that you might use on the place, you
don't
pay.
No, not on.
No, not on. That's what I say on the tractors on the property. But if you on the pickups and things like that, that you have cars and other things we have in the area there that are licensed vehicles. And
but you don't have roads.
We have about 40 miles of road there. Oh yes, we have. We have quite a large road. I mean, when I say large, for a little small community.
That number of votes must have something to do with it. 13 to 13.
Let me put it this way. The number of Republican votes has a lot to do with it.
Oh.
It so happens that we're all Republicans in that area. And our well, I ran on the Republican ticket down there and of course, did very well in my area, but I wasn't able to get up into this area, which borders Fairbanks. That's Clear and Healy and so on, and I didn't... do as well up in this area that I should have, because I can't get away from mining. No, it's not that so much. It's the fact that the votes are important, and you got to put the money where the votes are, and that's just the way. It's not only Alaska. California is just as bad, and Florida, everywhere you go. But poverty is one thing they always keep talking about you're going to have to eliminate, and I don't know how you can eliminate it faster than by employment.
The only real way to eliminate it.
And so if you look at the picture from a long-range standpoint, you have to increase employment on a more full-time basis year-round. And if they don't, the level of poverty is going to keep going up, and I can see, like I tell a lot of people, if it continues to go up, my poverty level will start at about $15,000 a year. But the natives of that area, which are the key to the whole area, we must find something for them to do and get them off of welfare and being dependent on the government. And the only way you can do it is by us people who employ them.
Well, isn't the natives, most of the natives come from down the Unoco, don't they?
That's Holy Cross and Ruby and Shagluck and
Shagluck.
In that whole area, yes. Now, they were planning, of course, a big move to bring them all to Fairbanks and Anchorage, and of course we oppose that bitterly down there, and I feel it's one of the most unsound programs that they've ever thought of, for the simple reason that they're dealing with a situation where the whole environment of the native is going to change, and once you get them into Fairbanks, then you have them to take care of from now on, and they won't want to come down and work for me on the dredge or run a bulldozer. They'll want to stay here in Fairbanks. And we hope that they will improve their conditions in their areas and let them stay in their areas. And those that want to come up here can come. But to take and make a mass movement of people in an area such as this, it would be very, very unwise. And because I've lived with them all my life and know what they think and how they think, I have a better idea, I think, than most people up here who say, well, we must improve their standards of living. See?
Well, we can improve their houses and some of the things like that.
You have enough here now to improve without bringing up any more. And the dormitory way of living is like a bunkhouse. It's not the way that you want to bring up anybody, in my opinion, native or anybody else. And once the native moves, then his family wants to move. His father and mother don't like it. In other words, the whole family of natives, as far as I'm concerned, are knit closely. And one of our men has 12 children that come up the flat every year. So if you start breaking up these homes, you're going to have a real bad situation.
You're going to have a problem,
yes,
the worst kind.
And we in the area, such as the traders and the storekeepers and the airline operators and so on, that isn't good for them either. They have an investment down in that area. And I don't know why anyone wants to think of moving people into a central location and getting everybody into an area that can't provide for what it's already got as a problem. And certainly Fairbanks has enough of them.
Well,
I've enjoyed visiting with you, folks.
Thank you very much. This is the end of the talk by Mr. John Miskovich.
Take your tape. You didn't date it.
Yeah.